From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. And we begin today with Illinois government and politics. Legislators are back in their districts this week. They're scheduled to return to Springfield next week in advance of a four-week push to conclude the spring legislative session. All this year, we've been hearing different perspectives on Illinois government, on issues like how much money it collects from citizens and how it spends it, what to do about the tens of thousands of migrants who've been bussed up from Texas, and many, many other issues. Joining me now to talk about that and more is State Senator Selena Villanueva. She's a Democrat, chair of the Revenue Committee, and Senate chair of the Illinois Latino Caucus. Villanueva represents the 12th District, which is mostly in Chicago. It includes the neighborhoods of Little Village, Pilsen, Chinatown, Bridgeport, also a small slice of the town of Cicero. Senator Villanueva, welcome to the 21st Show. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And listeners, in order to accommodate the senator's schedule, we taped this conversation earlier this morning, so we're not taking calls during this part of the show, but you can always let us know what you thought by emailing talk@21stshow.org. All right, Senator, I want to begin, as I have most of these conversations, with the state budget, because I'm at heart a policy nerd. And I've often said, if you want to understand what people in state government think is truly important, look at how they spend the people's money. So what do you think of how the budget process is unfolding this spring?
You know, it's funny because this is even before becoming revenue chair, being part of the Latino Caucus, which is such an important caucus in the legislature, I've been learning slowly but surely the entire process, and it's always really interesting. And now kind of seeing it in another aspect as revenue chair, as part of, you know, a team of legislators that are, you know, leading those negotiations. I'll tell you this. It's been interesting. It's always interesting. It's not as hectic right now as it was this time last year, but that doesn't mean that it won't ramp up, which is what I'm expecting. But I will say there are definitely a lot more asks this year, budgetary asks, than there are legislative asks that I've seen at this point in April. So it's been a little interesting in terms of the changing of, while we still have a lot of bills, and obviously there's still a lot of work that needs to be done legislatively, how advocates and other folks are really focusing in on the budget aspect of being a legislator.
Yeah, budgetary asks, people coming in asking for money, basically. So what are some of the Latino caucuses' legislative or even fiscal priorities this legislative session?
You know, we're a caucus that obviously represents our district, but also take on the additional responsibility of representing all Latinos throughout the state of Illinois. And we have populations in every single county of the state of Illinois. And we take a lot of that into consideration as we're kind of determining, kind of our priorities, our budget priorities. And, you know, while it is a long list, it is, you know, like our list really includes programs that we have seen have been successful in our communities that have really helped people. There are things like the parent mentor program, which actually, you know, pays stipends for parents to actually do some leadership development and be involved in the classroom. It might not necessarily be their child's classroom. They might be in the same school, but we've seen the impact of having additional support for teachers, especially post-COVID, of additional adults in the classroom that really kind of help with the support. There are, you know, different programmatic like aspects in terms of violence prevention work, that we've supported as Latino caucus members, because we understand, unfortunately, how big our communities have been impacted by violence, whether it's gun violence or gang violence. You know, we're trying to do what we can in order to try to help people. And really to provide, you know, support services, because unfortunately the money just isn't always there for Latino communities to be able to to really actually have consistent programming and so on and so forth. Free and charitable clinics, because we know, our communities are being served by free and charitable clinics because we have people who are of mixed status. There are some family members that are US citizens, some family members that are legal permanent residents, and some family members that are undocumented. And that creates a really big difficulty in terms of access to medical care for our community members. There's a lot more in terms of obviously some of the bigger buckets, but one of the bigger ones is pushing for the HBIA and HBIS programs, which are Medicaid-like programs for undocumented people in the state of Illinois. And while this causes some controversy with some folks, for us, the reality is this: we have community members that have been here 20, 30, 40 years and have been paying into the tax system, but do not receive tax returns, don't receive any type of Medicaid benefits, don't receive Social Security, don't receive any of the safety net benefits that US citizens and legal permanent residents do. And as a caucus, it has been one of our priorities to try to provide support for people who have been helping to prop up our economy, especially during a pandemic, because I'll be 100% honest with you, it was my district, which is predominantly immigrant. Predominantly Latino, that was hit hardest by COVID throughout the entire pandemic because I had four and five out of the top COVID positive zip codes. So when we talk about access to healthcare, I'm talking about it personally when I've had to talk to constituents and neighbors who have had family members pass away because they didn't have access to healthcare. This is an important one for us.
What are the stumbling blocks? So you mentioned safety as an important issue, and in preparing for this conversation, I came across a survey from Northwestern University's Center for the Study of Diversity and Democracy, which found common ground. This is the headline: New poll reveals common ground on key issues among Black and Latino voters in, this was in the Chicago mayoral race, but safety was the biggest issue. Can you talk about how safety is a concern for your constituents and maybe how it's different and how it's similar and different from the concern that Black residents or white residents in your area may feel about that?
So I live in the Little Village neighborhood of my district, which is a lower income Mexican immigrant community on the southwest side of the city of Chicago. And I'm very proud of my neighborhood. I'm proud of its successes, but I'm also proud of its resilience of coming together even in the worst of times. But the reality is that when you have poverty and you have lack of resources, it's a breeding ground for un trauma. It's a breeding ground for violence. And we see that. I not too long ago was at home on a Friday night. Surprise, surprise, which is very rare because we tend to work very long hours, but I was at home on a Friday night and I live with my younger brother and my father. And my father had gone out and I think it was probably like 8 or 9 o'clock at night and gunshots rung out. And it wasn't just a few, it was an entire clip of a gun. And again, in my neighborhood, fireworks go off all the time, even when it's not the 4th of July, because we have teenagers that enjoy doing those things, and kind of waking everybody up at at odd hours. But these were very clearly fire shots, and they were in front of my house. They weren't aimed at my house. I think they were aimed at the park in front of my house. But unfortunately, and fortunately, no one was hurt. There were no ambulances. The police were called, but again, like it took several minutes for the police to get there. And at that point, it's just part of the reality, unfortunately, of living in a neighborhood like mine. I'm glad that nobody was hurt, but as a legislator, like that still happens to me. Like that's still the reality that I live in. And that's the reality that my neighbors, that my constituents live in. And it's something that people are concerned about, and it's something that I'm concerned about because that's not something that should be happening. Now, I don't know if there was an intended target with that or if that was just, done in order to try to harm people. In speaking with the violence prevention folks, that do a lot of great work in my community that I know very well, I got a little bit more, of the back info and what it could have potentially been. But this is the type of stuff that, I think as of our caucus, we're very much aware of the realities of not just our own lived experiences and our own daily lives, but of those of the rest of the people in our district and in our communities. And I think there is a lot of correlation to what, Black Chicagoans and Black Illinoisans, the Black community, are experiencing as well, because poverty is a breeding ground, unfortunately. Those lack of resources, the lack of opportunities, it does create a really unfortunate situation. And for us, that's why it's one of the priorities to try to bring in more resources to really combat these issues. Because again, at the end of the day, there's only so much that we're going to be able to do in order to try to prevent things, but we also need to intervene in situations. And at the end of the day, I want people to be living in safer communities. It is, that's not just a goal, it's a value of mine. Like, people should be able to live their lives openly, freely, and safely, and live happy, thriving lives, and not be fearing the fact that they might leave their household and be victims of gun violence or of a carjacking or of anything else. And we're trying to do what we can at the level that we're able to really be able to make a difference legislatively, but also through the state budget, to try to create these intervention programs and fund these intervention programs so that we see decreased violence, not increased violence.
There are going to be people who listen to this and say, Chicago, there's a Democratic mayor. Illinois has a Democratic governor. The legislature is supermajority Democrats. Why? What is the major stumbling block to actually doing what needs to be done or allocating the funding in the way that you see fit to address these literally life and death issues you're talking about?
Because it's not one just like one thing. You can't just fund violence prevention programs and not fund education or fund after school programming or fund mental health. You can't just do, like, it has to be more of a holistic solution. You can't just say we're gonna, ban guns, because the reality is there is a gun lobby that, tries very hard to hold on to access to a lot of different guns that are not safe. And again, understanding that there are different lived experiences throughout the entire state. The way that people live their lives, in rural Illinois is different than the way that people live their lives in the city of Chicago or even suburban Illinois. But the reality is, at the end of the day, is that there are people suffering. There are people that are being, becoming victims of gun violence, and it is something that we have to fix legislatively and have tried to, and will continue to try to do. Because again, whether it's gang violence or gun violence that's happening on the street, or whether it's a mass shooting that's happening in Highland Park, everyone unfortunately has, whether regardless of their walk of life, has unfortunately, experienced this or seen this happening in their life or around them, and that's not okay. But I think the hangup is everyone thinks, or there's a, not everyone, there's a lot of people that think that this is a one fix solution, like one and done. All you got to do is fund this. And that's not the reality of things. You can't have one and do one without the other, because it's literally putting a bandage on a big open, gaping wound. And when people like to say, oh, well, it's the Democrats and they're soft on crime. No, we're not. We're trying to actually do more and trying to prevent crime from ever really happening. There are people that will lead you to believe, to think that, oh, well, if we just lock everybody up, that it's, going to stop the problem. No, what you do is provide an even bigger breeding ground of people not being able to rehabilitate themselves when they do make mistakes and make horrible decisions that they should be held accountable for. But here's the thing, like, we actually think that there are ways to solve issues before they even become issues. If you actually fund schools and provide opportunities for young people to go be part of after school programs, as opposed to just going home or not being able, to be supervised by an adult, to be able to have mentorship opportunities, to actually be able to have and speak to someone, a counselor, a therapist, a mental health professional, to actually address the trauma that they've experienced. Because the reality is, being poor is very traumatic. And I know that that's difficult for a lot of people to understand, because there's a lot of struggles that you don't process until you're an adult that really understand, man, I guess that is a trauma response, to the way that I grew up. there's just a lot of realities that I think people like to simplify, and that's not the truth. And again, that's it's not everybody. I think when we see things in an individual aspect and we get to talking to people, we understand more deeply and intimately what other folks are experiencing. When we get to walk a mile in other people's shoes, we understand what they're experiencing. But there are unfortunately people out there that want to lump everyone together, whether they're black, whether they're brown, whether, they're this or that, to say, well, they're all criminals, they're all the ones causing all of this problem. And it, like they should just, behave, when what's not understood is the root causes of all of those problems. And there are some really deep-rooted causes for violence, and that's what we're trying to address through the pushing of mental health supports. It's when we see domestic violence, it's really interesting because, again, I'm a big domestic violence awareness advocate. It's one of the things that, because of my constituency, but also, the work that I've done as an immigrant rights organizer, as working on really big issues, is we're able to see the complexities of domestic violence and understand, well, that doesn't just come because somebody decides one day that they're going to hit their partner. Like, there's something there. And we need to address issues of domestic violence with mental health support, with intervention support, with providing survivor support. There's different tactics, but we're more inclined to see and to be aware of the complexities of issues, like that, than we are of gun violence or gang violence. And I think we need to move away from this idea that bad people are just bad, instead of, thinking, okay, something happened to create and put this person on this path. How do we prevent this from even happening to begin with?
Yeah. All right. Let me remind listeners, we're speaking with State Senator Celina Villanueva, who is a Democrat from Chicago and Senate Chair of the Latino Caucus. We're going to take a break. More when we return. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. If you're just joining us, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We've been talking this morning with State Senator Celina Villanueva, who is a Democrat from Chicago, the 12th District. Her district includes the neighborhoods of Little Village and Chinatown, among others. And she is a Senate chair of the Latino Caucus. We actually spoke earlier this morning in order to accommodate the senator's schedule, so we're not taking calls during this part of the show, but let us know what you thought by leaving a voicemail at 217-300-2121. That's 217-300-2121. There's so many questions I want to get to, but our time is limited. So maybe I do think we need to talk about the situation of migrants and asylum seekers in a general way. How do you think Illinois has been doing at balancing the immediate needs of these individuals with, existing challenges among long-term residents like poverty and homelessness?
So, it's really interesting because I have an interesting perspective on this. Before becoming a legislator, I was an immigrant rights organizer. I try to explain people and give people kind of that background for them to understand the perspective, that I approach a lot of this work. There have been waves of immigrants who have been coming to this country every single year, and sometimes even longer than that. And what we're seeing now is different compared to what we've seen kind of before. While I was organizing, we saw waves of unaccompanied minors who were coming into or coming to the US border, the US-Mexico border, because of increased violence that was happening in Central America. And I remember this because people were like, well, we got to do something. Like, we got to protect these children, because unfortunately, this was happening, during an administration that was none too friendly to immigrants. And we saw, kids that were being locked up in cages. A lot of those children and young people were being sent to this country because they had family members who lived here, whether it was an aunt, an uncle, grandparent, like a cousin, somebody here. They were fleeing violence and persecution by, cartels, by gang violence as well. Other flows of refugees that we've seen have been Syrians who have been fleeing, a war, Ukrainians who have also been fleeing a war. We have seen different groups of people, and there's so many more. who have been coming to this country. And the difference has been their entry to this country. And the difference has been the way that we've approached, kind of incorporating them into our communities. When the Syrian refugees were coming in, there was money coming from the federal government through the refugee program, the refugee resettlement program, in order to help to provide services, support services for Syrian refugees, in order to provide in language support services. That there was, kind of like a more of a formal infrastructure that was there with community-based organizations helping to kind of get people settled and more integrated into communities. And the same thing with Ukrainians. There was funding from the federal government, and obviously a big push because we understand, unfortunately, what's happening in Russia and Ukraine, and the war between Russia and Ukraine. The
And an
difference
existing Ukrainian community in the Chicago area as well.
And what I'm getting at is that there are these formal and informal infrastructures for different communities that have existed. One of the things that people don't see a lot is, well, we don't see a lot of Mexican people that, are coming in here needing, to be housed. And that's because there's a very large Mexican population. There's an informal infrastructure and a formal infrastructure that already exists, predominantly in the Chicagoland area, but, in other places throughout Illinois as well. And that's a big component of why you've seen people who are like, well, I really don't have, a place to go. What we're not hearing as much, but is part of the narrative, is that there are people who are getting to Chicago, but then they're leaving because they do have a family member that they're going home to. Unfortunately, the rest of the people who don't have that informal infrastructure are kind of being left on our doorstep in the city of Chicago. And oftentimes, I think now they're actually leaving them out in the suburbs in not the best circumstances, especially during the cold when people were being left with, in flip-flops and shorts in, the cold, the Chicago winter. Is that you have people that there isn't a very large Venezuelan population in the city of Chicago or in the state of Illinois. You don't have that informal infrastructure for people to be able to take people in. And then you have government, obviously, because this is a manufactured crisis that has been manufactured by the governor of the state of Texas, in order to try to do whatever. And again, to create a narrative of democratic cities and to go after sanctuary cities, and go after democratically controlled legislators to say, look, they can't do anything from you, and pit people against each other. I am not the type of person that believes that, there's not enough pie to go around for everybody. There's more than enough pie. The question is, where do we and how do we value, the things that are happening, the issues that are th happening, and how do we put our money where our mouth is? We see federally, unfortunately, that there is money that is going out for foreign situations throughout the rest of this world, but we're not getting student loan relief the way that we need to. It is about the decisions that are being made, not because the money isn't there. The money's there. It's about the decisions being made. And so, again, I'm a big believer that there's a lot more that we could be doing. I don't view the migrants that have been coming into our community as foes. I view them as people who are trying to build a life for themselves in a world, in a place that they thought had more opportunities than where they came from. And that's very not unsimilar, or very similar, sorry, I should say, to the reason why my parents came to this country. And in a generation, my father and my mother saw, their hard work of coming here as very young kids. My mother was 13. My father was 15 years old. They met in the city of Chicago. They had a Chicago love story, but in less than a generation, they went from being undocumented to being legalized through the Immigration Reform and Control Act of 1986, and then seeing their children be able to actually have good, thriving, and be, positive members of society. But it took a lot of work. It took a lot of effort. It took that or informal infrastructure and formal infrastructure to be able to provide a lot of that support. And I think at the end of the day, I view people as people, and I try to see deeper than what we get at face value to understand why people are coming here, what the needs are and how we as human beings, not just as legislator and not just as government, but how we as human beings should be stepping up to the plate to help other people. Because while I'm not an overly religious person, I do believe in fundamental teachings of Christianity, because I was raised Catholic, is do unto others as you would have done unto you.
So I have an eye on the clock. There's so many more things I still want to ask you about, but for the sake of time, I'm going to jump ahead here to talking about Latino representation and American politics. So 17 members of the Latino caucus, that's about 10% of the General Assembly. According to the Census Bureau, 18% of Illinoisans identify as Hispanic or Latino. Briefly, what do you make of that disconnect or those two different numbers?
So, it's one of those things where our communities are highly concentrated in certain areas. So if you look at the Southwest side, we're very highly concentrated on the Southwest side, but we do have communities that have been growing in suburban municipalities and other areas throughout the state of Illinois, to be completely honest with you. What we strive as a Latino caucus is to represent all of our communities, all of our Latino communities. Throughout the state, through the legislative, measures that we support, and through the budgetary measures that we support as well, and through our additional work, because we do a lot of work, whether it is supporting citizenship workshops or supporting, different programmatic options that, people might not know about, to provide those services to people. I think one of the biggest things is, people like to call Latinos a sleeping giant, and I don't think we're sleeping. I think that unfortunately, when we talk about the political aspect of things, that, and I say this as a Democrat, our parties do not engage our communities. And it isn't about speaking the language, because, like a lot of us are bilingual, and some more of us speak a lot more English than other of us, but they're not necessarily engaging our communities around the issues that we care about, around, the issues that speak to us. Oftentimes, a lot of folks like to tell us who we are, when it's like, how about you take the time to actually listen to us about who we are? But I think one of the most important things to remember is, a lot of what we're seeing, particularly on the federal level, and particularly by people who have tried to villainize immigrant community members, is because they're afraid of what is happening. And that is a shift in our population. It used to be the idea that by 2040, one-fifth of the United States was going to be of Latino and Hispanic origin, except in Illinois, we're already seeing that we're at 18% and growing. I think we're going to get to that number a lot quicker than by 2040. And I think that puts a lot of fear into a lot of people. But for us, we see that as an opportunity, because a lot of our community members are people who are just trying to live their lives. And that's what we strive to do, is try to create better quality of life for our community members, because we work based off of our values. And that is the belief that people can make the best decisions for themselves, but we're here to support in the moments that are the most difficult, and in the moments where people find themselves to be and to have no options. So we're here to support our communities, and we're here to build that power for Latino communities to make sure that they're represented in the way that they deserve.
Last thing I want to ask you about briefly is, you mentioned, people are fear that increasing number. Some people see an opportunity, and in fact, I'm sure you've seen polling that says former President Trump has been gaining support among Latino voters. I've seen a bunch of hypotheses on this. Some say there's a realignment along educational attainment, and more Latinos are, more blue collar. Another idea is that there's a surge in second generation Latinos who are of voting age, and they identify more with white non-Hispanics or evangelical Christians. I've even seen some people say that Trump has a machismo that's appealing to some voters. What do you understand about this? What do you think is happening?
I think it's very interesting, because I don't think that that's the case in Illinois. I think that that's different. And I think it really does have to do with the issues and engaging people with the issues. And I give this example in 2016 and 2020, when Bernie Sanders was running during the primary, Bernie Sanders won predominantly Latino wards in the city of Chicago. And that was more so because of the issues that he was talking about, the accessibility to higher education, the accessibility to healthcare. It's it, having someone tell you that they support free college for all, because we know how difficult it is to pay for college, because the scholarships and the support isn't always there. You know, it's one of the reasons why that's a big component of, the work that I do, is trying to push for more and more of that to make college more affordable. And I would like to see college be free for all, because I do think that that is something that people should have. You know, education should be accessible to everybody. But I think it's about the issues. And I go back to saying that I it's not a Republican or a Democratic thing. I do think that we're always going to have people that we're going to identify with certain, individuals. You saw that, and you saw Latino support for George Bush during the Bush administration. But again, Latinos in and of themselves are people who really care about issues. What I've seen living in Chicago and living in the state of Illinois is obviously a higher propensity for Latinos to be supportive of, Democrats and Democratic candidates. That's the reality in Illinois. If you go to states like Texas, I think, it's a little bit different. But if you go to states like Arizona, that's changing. And that is because the conversation has been shifting in the state of Arizona. There's a reason why, like there's a, I think a Senate race that's happening in the state of Arizona, between two very, very different candidates, and one of them I think is Latino. And again, is speaking not just because, he's a Latino and that's why he's going to get the vote, but speaking to issues that matter to the community. I think that that's really, really important, and that is a criticism that I have of my own party, and something that I, continue to push within the Democratic Party, is to say, we need to be speaking to the issues that matter, and we need to do, work in Latino communities, because we can't expect them to just come along with us and vote for us and support us every single, way. We have to do the work. And again, I say that as a Democrat. I say that, as someone who is very proudly, in my position, but I know that I have to do the work to represent for my people. I know I have to do the work to engage them, and I do it in a way that meets folks where they're at. And I think that gets lost in the conversation, is that we don't always meet people where they're at, but we need to, and we need to do more of that work. And not just for Latinos, I think for all communities, because I think that we're living in a different world politically that we are now than we were 20, 10, 20, 30 years ago. But it's an opportunity. I see this all as an opportunity to engage people in real conversations. There's going to be some people that are going to be, set in their ways, but I think that there is more than enough people, and especially young people in Latino communities. Our population is very, very young. More than a third of our population is under the age of 35. I think it might be a little bit more, but that is an opportunity. And I think that is both something that people fear, but for me, I find that exhilarating, and an opportunity to be able to really build power.
State Senator Selena Villanueva is a Democrat from Chicago. She is Senate Chair of the Latino Caucus. Thank you for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you for having me.